This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The party is over for Elizabeth Warren's candidacy for president in 2020. Today, the Massachusetts senator ended her campaign just a few days before Michigan's presidential primary. Here's Warren outside of her home in Massachusetts. Let's listen to her speaking with reporters today.
You know, this has been the honor of a lifetime. 10 years ago, I was teaching a few blocks from here and talking about what was broken in America and ideas for how to fix it. And pretty much nobody wanted to hear it. And I've had a chance to get out there and talk with millions of people. And, you know, we have ideas now that we talk about that we just weren't talking about even a year ago. A 2-cent wealth tax and universal child care that could be real. We could make it happen. And canceling student loan debt for 43 million Americans and raising Social Security payments. Those are life-changing events for people. And we can actually do this.
It is not clear yet who, if anyone, Elizabeth Warren is going to endorse going forward. But now her supporters must decide who's going to get their vote. One of them is Keith Owens, a resident of Detroit. Stateside producer Laura Weber Davis talked to him this morning and asked what drew him to Warren in the first place.
What drew me to Warren was I felt that she was, particularly when she had a program for this, and I think that her detailed analysis of what was going on with the country, what the country needed to get back on its feet, I think that what started off as something that people kind of snickered at, they began to realize that those details mattered, that she understood the system, had studied it for a long time. And so I think her remedies weren't just tossed out. She had research behind them. I also felt and still feel that, although it looks clear she won't be the candidate at this point, but I feel that she was the best equipped actually to beat Donald Trump. Obviously, other people did not feel that way, but I felt that not just because of her plans and programs, that's not what it would take more than that, I think, in a debate scenario to beat Donald Trump. I think that she was the one in a debate scenario specifically. I think she would just tear him apart.
So you're saying intellectually?
Trump's not intellectual, so you could it'll be different. I think Trump is a street fighter, you know, and I think that you have to know how to somebody to be able to really come at him in a way that he can't handle. I think Hillary was a brilliant politician. She's not a great debater, and she didn't quite know how to handle where he's coming from. I think Elizabeth Warren. You go back to Pelosi. Pelosi is a very smart woman who knows how to embarrass Trump. Trump is somebody who responds to being embarrassed and being made to look like a fool. If he's embarrassed, made to look like a fool, and showed up by a woman, I believe he would pretty much start to unravel. And I think that she's somebody who's uniquely equipped to do that. I mean, and obviously when it comes to the program, with all the other baggage that comes with him, I mean, the thing that he's, you know, racism, sexism, crime, you name it, that's obviously ammunition for anybody.
What do you make of her failure to make inroads with delegates or voters?
I think what you have is fear and sexism to a degree, and that's not to diminish what the people. I understand the opposition, not the opposition, but the hesitancy. And when you're talking about the fear of Trump is immense. And obviously I understand that. And this decision is who can best do it. And I think after when Biden received that endorsement from Clyburn in South Carolina, that was a huge thing. And once people saw that, and it was happening before then as well, and I believe part of that is just that I believe they viewed her and Bernie to some extent as well. I mean, of trying to push things too far. Had it been another kind of election, she would have been much further ahead. But right now, people, when Joe Biden is talking about just getting things back to normal, that appeals to people. You know, let's not try and go for big structural change right now. Let's just get rid of Trump. Let's just get back to normal. Let's breathe. And I think that's more or less what appealed. And also, and obviously, the sexism. I think there was a fear that a woman and Hillary contributed to that. I mean, in the sense that okay, she couldn't quite win, so we can't try this again. A woman just might not be able to do that. There wasn't enough. There was just fear that she would not be able to pull that off. Obviously, I disagree, but I think that's. Once again, going back to just somebody that looked that had who had the credentials, long-term credentials that Biden has, let alone someone who worked with Obama, who's obviously extremely popular. It just seemed a stronger, a more credible choice to a lot of people.
There's this idea that Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. But maybe that the tide has sort of turned in the past 4 years.
That's very true. I'm well aware of that statement. And that has been the case for a long time. And I think that's what happened. That is what happened this time. I think that Trump did. Trump had that effect. I mean, that people were looking for a sign. Where do we go? Who is the one? And people were holding back. That's why you saw, there were sometimes people wait to the last minute until they cast, and they say which is the one. And in South Carolina, which holds a lot, understand that Clyburn doesn't just hold weight in South Carolina. Clyburn holds clout. His clout has been a long way. And when somebody gives that signal, they're like, okay, this is where we go. And exactly that. People are falling in line. And I think we'll begin to see that echo down the line.
So it's been written and surmised that Warren supporters are these college-educated progressives that live in a bubble, and they're sort of consumed with confusion and despair that others can't see why she is the best candidate. Would you say you're living in that bubble?
No. I mean, if I am in the bubble, how would I know, right? But I don't think so. I think that it's not, and I'm definitely not consumed with despair. I think the people that, number one, I think Warren's followers, supporters, are much broader, reach than that. I think that there are a lot of college-educated, nerds, wonks, whatever, in that category. That's true. But there are others that I know personally who are not. I was at a rally just last weekend, there were almost nobody that fit that category. Black people for Warren. And, we're working with other women who was other – working class, black folks who are very strong for Warren, I think, who understand what it is that she had to offer, and who look at, who have looked at those programs, who looked at what she has to offer, and who see the other side, So I don't think it's a bubble. I think it's just that we see things, we're looking at a different picture than I think other people are looking at.
Keith Owens, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Elizabeth Warren's candidacy hit notes with some voters, especially women who've been waiting a long time to see a woman in the White House. Nancy Kaffer is a columnist with the Detroit Free Press who's been thinking and writing about this. Nancy, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks so much, April.
What do you attribute to the lack of momentum around Warren for Democratic voters?
There's so many reasons why any candidate doesn't catch on, and it comes from messaging. Who are they appealing to? How are they framing their message? Is it what people want to hear right now? But when we're talking about a candidate who is not, a white man, which is what we have overwhelmingly elected to the presidency for centuries, we have to also question how much of a role, we're talking about a woman candidate here, misogyny plays in it. We have people who have very deeply rooted feelings about women, bias that they may not even be aware of. And that's definitely something we can't leave off the table in analyzing why she didn't catch on with people.
You wrote in your column today, it feels like we're here again and that we're kind of always here, weary in an America that too often sidelines qualified, competent, accomplished women for less qualified white men. I have to ask you about this. If we're viewing the Warren candidacy through the lens of Clinton versus Trump, then sure, Warren did have a lot more detail to offer and arguably as much moxie as Bernie Sanders. But can we really say that she's more qualified than Joe Biden, who served in the House and the Senate and as vice president?
No, of course. Joe Biden is not less qualified than Elizabeth Warren. But when you look at other candidates in the race who were first deemed potentially more electable and then actually outperformed her in some primaries, Bernie Sanders is a socialist, and that is something that is very controversial in this country, whether his supporters want to acknowledge that or not. Pete Buttigieg is very talented, a very gifted politician, but he is pretty young for the field, and he is the mayor of a very small, or was the mayor of a very small town. I believe that when he became mayor, he was elected with like 10,000 votes or something like that. We're not talking about someone with a lot of big political experience. Mike Bloomberg was talked about as sort of the savior for the race, which, of course, you know, didn't happen. But this is a person who has this horrible history with stop and frisk, with making misogynistic comments to women, and who was literally a Republican. Like, you know, I'm old enough to remember when he was a Republican, because it wasn't really that long ago. And these are all people who have been described as more electable than this very qualified woman.
You know, if we say that bias has had a role to play in her candidacy not really catching fire, is it possible we're underselling people's reservations about what's going to happen after the primaries? Many people looked at Elizabeth Warren, thought about her work after the financial crisis, you know, fighting against Wall Street, looked at some of her environmental stances and thought, you know what, I just want someone who's more centrist for November because that's who I think should take on Donald Trump.
Sure, that's a thing that people can think, and they, you know, I'm not going to tell them that they're wrong to think that. But my inbox this morning is full of men emailing me to tell me that they would vote for a woman, just not this woman, which is kind of what was said about Hillary and what's often said about women, and that they didn't not vote for her because she was a woman, but because she reminded them of a nagging school teacher, and that they would have voted for a woman, but they wouldn't vote for Elizabeth Warren because she's untrustworthy. She's too hostile. She's also not hostile enough. She's attacked Bloomberg when she shouldn't have. She didn't attack Bloomberg. She attacked Bernie. She shouldn't have attacked Bernie. You know, she attacked Bernie too much. She attacked him not enough. It's this whole mess of contradictions that really, really underscores what I'm talking about here, is that a lot of people have this gut level reaction that they don't seem to examine, that is really predicated on her gender.
Do you think any of this tracks with what we know about Republican women who voted for Donald Trump in 2016? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who have practice in voting for a candidate who doesn't necessarily look like them.
There are a lot of reasons to not vote for Elizabeth Warren that aren't about misogyny, but misogyny is one of those reasons. And women are not free from misogynistic bias. We know this. We know that women can still have these strong reactions that express misogynistic bias. So, you know, we do have, though, the point you raise, you know, Republican women voted for Donald Trump. We have this situation in this country where all but one of our leaders, all but one of our presidents have been white men. The heroes of the vast majority of our books and movies are white men. If it's a woman, it's a chick flick. If it's a non-white person, it's, you know, a movie targeted to that demographic. Movies that star Gerard Butler are just movies, right? So we have this cultural situation where people who aren't white men are asked to identify with and view them as leaders, you know, for thousands of years. So yeah, we have a lot of practice in seeing white men as leaders because they fit the model of what we've always been shown leaders to look like. And that's one of the hurdles that women have to get over as candidates.
You know, I feel like as voters, we're not always the most consistent people either. I mean, this is true of both men and women. I remember covering the primary season in 2008 when Hillary Clinton was competing against Barack Obama. Now, granted, this was out in Oregon, but I was meeting rural white Republican women who were crossing over into the Democratic primary. They were so excited to vote for a woman. They really wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton. But obviously, people changed their minds. And 8 years later, it certainly seems like a lot of those women went for Donald Trump. Maybe voting at some point is more about zeitgeist and what people feel like they want right now than their willingness to take a chance on a candidate who maybe reflects their experiences a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's, and again, I'm not saying people who didn't vote for Elizabeth Warren are uniformly sexist or misogynistic, but some of them are. Definitely, you're right. What that candidate is speaking to in that moment has a lot to do with it. What the field looks like generally can have a lot to do with why people make that choice. Sometimes, you know, also a lot of times voters, we want to pick a winner, and that's fine. We want our vote to matter. People are making strategic choices. Some, I've heard from a lot of people who right now who are wrestling with whether to vote their head, which says, you know, one of the two men front runners in the race is going to be the candidate. If I have a strong preference, I should pick one of those. And people who are saying, my heart still says vote for Warren, even if she drops out, because I want my ballot to register that I chose a woman for president. And, you know, people have this very complex matrix of reasons why they make decisions. And it's not always about logic. It's, you know, it's a little bit like dating. You have a set of parameters, and within those parameters, you make a choice based on emotion, and then you like look for reasons to backfill it logically, right? It's like, well, you know, he's good. We have the same goals. We have the same, you know, this all makes sense. But we, you know, but really it's an emotional choice. I mean, it's, you know, when you talk about the overused cliche of would you want to have a beer with the person, that's what that speaks to. It's not about, are there policy choices ideologically consistent with what I believe is right? You know, it's this is a person who I feel connected to and who I feel like understands me and who would listen to me if I spoke to them and who I would value what they had to say. And those are emotional choices.
You wrote something 4 years ago about how thrilling it was for you and for your mom to cast a ballot for a woman. Your mom lives in Alabama and is a really strong feminist.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, women running for president doesn't seem quite that unusual anymore. There were several women involved earlier in the race this year. And on the other hand, the leading woman in the Democratic race did not manage to get momentum. How does that land with you?
How is it not unusual? We've had two elections now in which women have been serious candidates, and only in one of them did the woman become the front runner and the nominee. I mean, it's still, and we have yet to have a female president. I think it's still incredibly unusual.
Do you think you learned anything about the way forward for women who want to run for office or even for the presidency in the future?
I mean, when you have a toddler and you want them to try a different kind of food, you have to put the different food in front of them, what, like
50 times
before they'll eat it. Yes. And I mean, we're all kind of like that, right? Like we, you know, at first it was like, what is this weird internet on your phone thing? And then it gets more popular and now you can't imagine your life without it. It's, you know, it's so weird to tell people what you're doing on this MySpace thing. And now, you know, we all have Facebook and Twitter and whatever, you know? So yeah, we just have to keep making this feel familiar. We have to, it would have been amazing to break this glass ceiling in one just dramatic effort. But, you know, we've got to continue to just run qualified, quality women candidates and just get people used to this idea that women are part of the field. It needs to become not unusual. We need to accept that women are part of this landscape. And then I think that's, unfortunately, this slow process that we have to do.
Nancy Kaffer of the Detroit Free Press, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.